Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Do you love fashion? Do you love getting compliments on how well you're dressed? Are you always seeking the latest trends? Then we're talking to you. BostonProper.com is your fashion destination and the only place to go for all those nods, head turns, and new styles. No matter the day, season, or occasion, Boston Proper has what you're looking for. Sophisticated, confident clothing designed to flatter and get noticed. So visit BostonProper.com now and start creating your perfect wardrobe. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a tissue dispenser, and I love films. As Wayne Dyer once said, you are important enough to ask, you are blessed enough to receive back. Ask for the reinstatement of When Love Is Gone into The Muppets Christmas Carol. You deserve it and it will be put back. Absolutely, I heard that news and I've never been happier. Thank you, Wayne Dyer, for the reminder. Happy Christmas. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Jamila Jamil, and even Cred Blambles. But this week, it's the amazing comedian, actor, writer, and filmmaker, Mr. Bobcat Goldthwaite. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get about an extra 20, 25 minutes of chat with Bobcat. We go deep. We talk about beginnings and endings. You get a truly moving, profound secret from him. You also get the whole episode uncut and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Ted Lasso season 2 is all available now on Apple TV Plus. You can watch the whole thing in one go. Have a cry, have a laugh. Soulmate season 1 is all on Amazon Prime. You can watch that too and have a laugh and a cry and a think. So, Bobcat Goldthwaite rose to fame in the Police Academy movies and over the last however many years has become an incredibly prolific and fascinating filmmaker, comedian and writer. We recorded this about a week ago. I was very grateful to him for being so open and honest with me. There's some really lovely stuff in here and I really think you're going to love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 173 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by an actor, a writer, a stand-up, a director, a producer, a legend, a hero, a man we would describe as eclectic, a man who has done everything that can be done. Please welcome to the show, the man, the myth, the legend, it's Mr. Bobcat Goldthwaite!
Oh, well, thank you. That's such a kind introduction. It's very, very sweet. It's I'm nice also a ninja.
And a ninja.
Fuck. Yeah, fuck. Well, you can. That's how good of a ninja I am. You didn't even know.
Yeah. Really, really good ninja-ing. It's very nice to meet you, Bobcat. We've literally just met.
It's great to meet you. I really love this show. You know, I live out in the woods, and listening to this show makes me feel like I'm hanging around with my friends.
Where in the woods? Is it a secret location?
I live in Illinois. I moved during the pandemic to about an hour outside of Chicago, and I live on a dead-end street in the woods. And in the Midwest of the U.S., I am thin. I am skinny here after living 35 years in LA. I'm the Daniel Craig of DuPage County, Illinois.
You're the hot bud in town. I like
yeah.
That's fucking great. How do you feel do you feel settled there? Do you think this is it for a while or do you miss
LA? No, I love living here and I also you know, all the stuff that I've directed, none of it's in Los Angeles lately.
That's true.
And so you know, and I mean, I can edit remotely and I get to keep working, you know.
Yeah.
But most of the time I'm out chopping wood. That's not a euphemism. I actually chop a lot of wood.
Oh, man. It does sound quite dreamy.
My buddy is, I'm going to start the name dropping, but...
Please.
Tom Kenny, who's the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, has been my friend since I was 6 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we went to Catholic school together. We've known each other our whole lives. And I'm on a group text, and he doesn't think it's funny that I'm chopping wood. He's like, you guys, bobcats shouldn't have a chainsaw. It's not even, it's not, don't think it, it's not funny. Don't encourage them. You shouldn't have axes. But, and I go out and I fell trees. And it's funny because my girlfriend's a liability claims adjuster. So like, we'll go to Disneyland and she'll be looking at like a little pool of water on the ground. She goes, that's a claim. So, but she has no problem me walking through the yard with a chainsaw.
You're a fucking walking claim. That's very exciting.
The human claim.
Yeah. I got so many things I wanted to ask you. One, I mean, listen, on a broad scale of things, I find you as a whole, like, I love the fact that you do literally everything, that you do stand-up, that you write, that you make films. And I also love that your films are so wildly different that it's actually quite hard to pinpoint, like, what is a Bobcat Goldthwait thing? Like, as in, they're all so very different. I mean, I'd say there's a darkness in them, maybe, would connect...
I'll argue on that, but I thank you for noticing.
Well, I would say I would agree with your argument. I'd say there's a darkness and a sweetness. They seem outwardly to be cynical, but actually, in the end, I think you have a real love. In fact, in all of them, now I'm thinking about it, they all end quite with a lot of love and heart.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, thanks for watching them. You know, I jokingly say my movies make hundreds of dollars, but I think the only cynical one, it was probably God Bless America, mm-hmm. where, you know, it's a spree killer comedy. I don't know. But I say it's a very violent film about kindness. Mm. But, and I made it years ago, but I truly was wondering where we were going. It sounds very pretentious, but I was wondering where we were going as people, because, you know, we were just so cruel and getting so out of control. Yeah. And it got much worse than anything in that movie.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I watched your Bigfoot film, Willow Creek, and I love that. And it's also like so different from everything else. And I'm, you tell me, but I think the thing that's most interesting about that film is that it's the most pure found footage film ever. Like, as in, there's no cheating. It's like, this is what the footage would be, and this is where the footage would end, and you can't cheat it.
Yeah, thanks. My problem's always been with found footage. It's like, I'm sorry your family got raped and killed, but I think if we recut it, there's a tremendous picture in here for everyone. So I there's only 67 edits in all of Willow Creek, and it's basically if you just hit play on a camera and that's what you would get. But you know, that it's funny, the inspiration. I mean, I am kind of a big deal in the Bigfoot community, whatever. That's again.
Oh, go on, please tell me.
No, well, you know, whatever. I'm sorry. My brain's going to so many stories. I was around a campfire one night. And where the Patterson-Gimlin footage was shot, the actual, you know, that footage, the famous footage. Yeah. And it's 2.5 hours down an 11-mile road, and then you hike in, and you're in the middle of nowhere. And we saw two mountain lions. Right. And so I'm sitting by the one guy who's got a gun, this guy. And so Tommy Amarone, who's the Bob Dylan of the Bigfoot community, was there. And he sang his entire catalog, all songs that are centric to Bigfoot history. And he goes through about 17 songs, and then he's runs out. He's a big guy, and he's in camo, and we're on a campfire. And he's like, he didn't have any more songs. He goes, you guys like Jewel? I go, I would love to hear you sing Jewel. So Tommy Amarone sang Jewel. And then the guy that had the gun, Robert Lederman, I go, he says to me, he goes, you know, I'm a writer too. I go, oh, what do you write? He says, well, you know, Twilight. I go, of course. He goes, well, I write tween fiction set in the Bigfoot community. And I go, oh, what's the name of your book? You know, I think I'm going to look it up. And he goes, well, the first one's Yeti or Not. this is the guy that's keeping me from getting mauled by a mountain lion. I'm like, oh, that sounds great. But boy. I could go on about Bigfoot forever, but we won't go down that road.
Tell me, well, with all your, is there a Bigfoot in your head?
I want to live in a world that there's an 800-pound wood ape. It's a little bit like if Spielberg, I'm comparing myself to Spielberg, but if Spielberg came out and said, hey, there's no aliens, you would say, yeah. Oh, man, you just ruined E.T.
Yeah.
So,
no, exactly.
I don't want to live in a world where there isn't the possibility. And by the way, UFOs are real now. So, you know, maybe the government's going to come out and say, oh, by the way, Bigfoot's real, too.
Yeah.
Like, this past year has been so messed up that the government came out and said UFOs are real and no one batted an eye. They were like, yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. It was just a sort of normal news day, wasn't it? It was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the aliens are here. Okay, cool. What about... Here's the other thing I want to know about you. So you do stand up. Are you doing stand up at the moment now you're in Illinois, or has that stopped for a while?
Yeah, no, I'm out all the time, you know. There's a connection that you make with a live audience. I'm not going to lie, I need money. I go out on the road to make bread so I can keep making, you know, I make a living so I can make movies. I don't make a living making movies. Yeah. So
oh, wow.
So that's why I'm it's a great job, trust me, you know. Although the audiences are so, I mean, they're just, it's like a, people can't act right getting on a plane. Do you think they can act right
with this
two-drink minimum? And then, you know, Zed from Police Academy's politics don't line up with yours. It's ugly out there for me, you know.
Oh, man. Here's what I want to know, right? You, looking at your stuff, like, you have directed a lot of really amazing comedy specials, other people's stand-up shows, and you did Chappelle's Show, and you've done, like, what is your, if you can sum it up, like, what's your secret of directing comics and how to make a good special? What's your, how do you do it?
Mostly to make sure they're comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, so there's some comedians want to know everything, how it's going to be shot and what's the stage and what they're, you know, and then other folks just show up. But the idea is that when they get there, all they got to do is do that show. And all they got to do is that show that they've done over and over again. So sometimes there's a little bit of like structuring people's acts and maybe pitching a line here and there. And then other people, you know, Ron Funches was a blast. You know, he loves wrestling. And so we did this big wrestling open, you know. But then when I did Patton's, I've done two of Patton's, you know, I knew he was going to disclose about his wife passing away. So the last thing you want is an opening that's like, ladies and gentlemen, you know. So he gets out on the stage in three shots. There's a shot exterior that dissolves, and then he's in a hallway. Actually, two shots, and then he just walks out there by himself because we all knew the elephant in the room. He was walking out there all by himself. Yeah. So then when he tells that story, it's just on a single camera with a really slow push, because I knew I wasn't going to be cutting around the room, and the cut off his face would have been horrible. So I had a long lens, and then because it's the digital age, I was able to keep this close-up going. And you know what's interesting? I was able to pick off people in the audience who were crying, but I did not want to put that in the special because I did a cut where you saw people crying because it felt very exploitive. It felt like you were watching
that's interesting.
Yeah, it felt like you were watching a daytime chat show or something. So there's different jobs, you know, and then it's you know, I directed Kimmel for 3 years.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I was the guy in the booth. So it was no one knows that because, like, it's like, hey, you know that guy that set the Tonight Show on fire and smashed up that other show? And he's our director. Yeah, ABC didn't let that out. So, yeah, I'd be the guy in the booth calling the shots. Yeah, I was going to tell a story, but it's...
Please tell it.
Well, there's two stories. There's one, Grover, the Muppet, not Washington or Cleveland. Grover was on the show, and he was laying on the stage floor, and he was all flat, and he was like all akimbo, and he was like, it looked like a suicide. He looked like a Ouija photo, you know, he was just like... And I said to the puppeteer, I was like, yo, you got to put Grover on. That's fucking up my shit big time, because it was really disturbing. And I watched the man put on Grover, and then Grover goes, hi, Bobcat. And it was like that Chris Farley show sketch. In the back of my head, I was like, oh, Grover knows my name. The most starstruck I've ever been. The most starstruck.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
I mean, it's like, you know, I've met and hung out with a lot of people, but I couldn't keep my shit together. And then, and at that same moment too, though, I was like, oh, this is clearly where I must have got my old act. Like I was like some sense memory of as a kid, you know, can you count to 10, John, John? Ah! It's really the same cadence. I mean, I really think comedically Grover probably influenced me more than anything.
You're Grover. What a revelation. Listen, steal from the greats if you're going to do it.
Yeah, steal from the king. I think Grover, yeah, I mean, I think the earlier version of what I was doing on stage was kind of childlike, and he was goofy and hurt and mad. So yeah. So I guess it was definitely Muppet-like.
The thing of not using those shots of people crying, I'm always fascinated with how you make a live show then televised and how you capture the feeling. Like, I think the hardest thing to capture is live comedy. The feeling, what it's like when you're in the audience, when you then watch it on TV. Yeah, what's your...
Well, no, because like when you watch it, it's like, you know, it's you're watching a show and you might be engaged with the comedian. And then suddenly the director goes, hey, what would it look like if you had the worst seat in the house? And then they cut to a big wide shot. You know, it's so disturbing. I just did the documentary that I did with Dana Gould and myself. Audiences are, I kind of want to do this in the future. Like sometimes I put long lenses and then push in. And like when I did Marin, he's all inside his head. So I just had lenses that were so close that they're more, cinematic. They were more close-ups than that flat guy in front of a curtain. But when Dana and I did the thing, I just told the audience, look, there's cameramen here. So we're telling stories and there's a camera that's like a foot from my face, and they're racking focus between the two of us as we tell stories. And it was done that way. It was a very low budgeted thing, but people who see it tell me that that was the closest it felt like being in a comedy club. And I'd like to tell you I was that inspired, but I just kind of was thinking, well, I don't have all the cameras to make it look all the bells and whistles. So
yeah,
I'm going to just invite the cameras to be on stage. I mean, really on stage with us. And I knew I was shooting enough shows that if a camera blew one of the shots, there'd be another version of the material.
That's fucking cool.
The part of the joyride with Dana and myself that I'm excited about as a person who makes movies is there's genuine times where the audience is talking to us and it's just captured in a single shot and it's not whipping or panning. It just happened to be there.
Yeah.
And so I think hopefully, and also I felt like, you know, behind the scenes footage of comedy is usually really painful because watching comics trying to be on, it's horrible. Yeah. So on purpose, I put the cameras in the back seat so Dana and I wouldn't perform for him. And lo and behold, of course we knew we were filming, but we got way more honest than we normally would.
Joyride is the only thing of yours I haven't seen, but I did watch the trailer today and it looked, I really, really liked the it had all that feel that you were talking about. It looked really great. And I look forward to seeing it, Bobcat. but fuck.
What?
I've forgotten to tell you something.
What?
Ah, shit. We've been talking about...
I got bumped.
No.
You're going to have Gilbert on? Gilbert Godfrey? You're going alphabetically?
Well, let's say you got bumped in quite a big way. you've died. You're dead. Dead.
I'm dead. Okay. When you say I died, I've died many, many nights. You mean pushing up daisies?
Fully,
dirt nap.
Fully dead. Yeah.
This is
it.
I got to tell you, some people lost some money on a pool. They thought I was going out in the 80s, so they can just cram it. They can just suck it. I win. I mean, I'm dead, but I'm very, I'm not thrilled about it. you know. But I'm happy we're talking.
What? How did you die?
Oh, now I remember. Now I feel like an idiot. I feel like a big idiot.
No, I'm the idiot. I should have remembered.
But I... It didn't make the press. It was it was classified as a timely death. Like, yes. It wasn't like he was killed in his prime. So it's not you. It's not on you.
No,
so
right.
I here's the thing you probably don't know about me is that I love skydiving. That is my favorite thing in the whole world. I love to skydive. And it's the kind of thing, it's like scuba diving. It's like people who, you know, you get cocky, you get you do it over and over, and you're not thinking safety. And I went out the plane, and I forgot my parachute. So I was plummeting to the earth.
Yep.
And I thought, well, I'm dying now. I could freak out, or I could go, this is beautiful. I'm gonna die doing my favorite thing, and I could just enjoy the ride. And I'd love to tell you I'm a better man than this, but I freaked the fuck out. I shit my pants. I was completely dehydrated. I was a bag of bones. It's a bag of skin and bones. Yeah, I mean, it sounded good for just enjoy the ride. But no, I crapped myself.
Where did you land?
Oh, that's the part that I thought would get more press. I hit a bus of orphans.
Oh, wow. And did they all die?
No, they were fine.
Okay.
They were fine. They just told the kids that Randy Quaid fell on the bus. That's a joke. That's not a podcast joke. People don't know that I look like right now that I'm
going to do like Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid biopic.
For the patrons who are watching the video, they're like, that's a good joke. my dream death is skydiving and don't open the chute. I mean, I'd leave out the shitting myself and landing on the orphans, but that's my dream death.
Is it really?
Yeah.
And have you discussed this before?
In my life, I have. I've you know it's usually what? My opener.
With the ladies or on stage?
It's like first date.
Yeah.
Chat.
Yeah, I went on a string of dates once, and I said, you know, I was on a third date after two other dates, and I said, this the past two women I dated, they said they wanted to commit suicide, and the woman said, during the date? Which is pretty funny. You know, I used to think much darker, like when I would think of suicide, I would actually think I would take someone out with me. I wouldn't kill them. I would just break into someone's home like an NRA guy, take his gun and go, hey, explain this, and then blow my face off. And then he would be like, this is a funny story. Bob Scratch Goldfarb came in here and blew his face off.
Tell me this. Do you worry about death?
I think about death all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't worry about it. I don't go, oh, this could go wrong and I could die. You know, like I rappelled in nude from the roof of the Oakland Coliseum once during a Nirvana concert. And I was 150 feet up in the air. And I wasn't worried about dying. I never rappelled before. I was more like going, I hope this is funny. By the way, if you're naked, it was midnight. It was New Year's Eve. If you're naked at midnight, you don't get a kiss. I was just.
Good. That's good life lessons for everyone.
Life lessons. Yeah, I had the in utero wings on. I had the angel wings on, and I had a hat, which I like. It's like I was like, well, I don't mind if people see my love handles and my gut and my penis, but I don't want them to see my balding pate.
What do you think happens when you die? What do you think? Do you think there's an afterlife?
I don't believe in one, but I'm not the person I used to be. I used to be an atheist, agnostic than atheist. And now I actually do believe that there's some sort of God. Now, to go beyond that, I don't know. I've been there when someone dies and I had that was actually a turning point for me, because I didn't feel that person left. I felt like something was released into this, really? that you couldn't stop. It was this man was just, he was, of course I can't call him on the phone, but he was still there, still going to be there. So it changed my perception.
I really like that. Well, I got good news for you. There is a heaven. There is a heaven.
Oh, that's a relief.
Yeah, that's really good.
What do they do in heaven?
It's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
I like ducks.
It's got ducks, wool-to-wool ducks. The walls are made of ducks. The chairs are made of ducks.
Wow.
In a way, it's too many ducks for some. But
too
for
many.
You,
that doesn't exist. Too many ducks.
That's why it's your heaven.
That's my heaven.
Ducks everywhere.
There's ducks and pizza.
Ducks and pizza. And
I should
these
also
ducks.
Say, and and my daughter and girlfriend. I don't want them in heaven because that would mean they're dead. They've got a good run.
No, they're,
yeah.
They also, there's no room for them with all the ducks, so it's fine. Don't worry about them. They'll be fine. So many ducks.
Well, one's allergic to down, so.
So it's for the best.
Yeah.
And the ducks, they're so excited to see you. But they want to know about your life, and they want to know about your life through film. And the first thing they ask you is, and they say, this is talking ducks. They say, what is the first film you remember seeing, Bob?
Look at this is the best heaven ever. I got talking ducks, and they want to watch movies with me?
Yeah.
I might go scratch an itch with a .38 tonight. this sounds unbelievable.
Yeah.
The first movie that I remember, like, seeing, like, I went to the movies on my own, kind of.
You don't know. Well, I
well, I, because I have a long, weird story. I remember I went with the neighbors to a drive-in, and they took us to a kid's movie. And then all the kids fell asleep, and me and Mr. Tool, the father, watched this really violent Clint Eastwood movie that I can't figure out which one it was.
Oh, wow.
It might have been High Plains Drifters. But I don't know if the timing, it could have been like it would make sense if it was like put on a drive-in double bill a few years after. But the first movie I remember seeing, it was released as Godzilla versus the Smog Monster.
Okay.
The real name is, Godzilla versus Hedorah. But when I think about it, it just blew my mind. It was so great. And it wasn't like the other Godzilla movies, because a lot of the fighting happened at night. So it looked a little a little less cheesy. But it was really funny because the smog monster, this monster was ate pollution, which seems like it'd be good for the environment.
Yeah.
But he lived, but he still was really mad.
Seems like a cool guy.
Yeah. We need to get rid of him. Yeah. So he ate pollution, and he got bigger and stronger. In fact, he got so big he could actually fly.
Oh, wow.
And then there's a great scene where Godzilla, he's flying now. He's got to fly to catch up with the smog monster. And he breathes. He's not breathing fire. It looks more like he's just like hot air's coming out of his mouth. And he flies backwards. So Godzilla flies backwards with his halitosis, with his bad breath or something. And it looks awesome if you see it. But so this movie, in the American version, they had added a song about saving the earth. And that was the name of the song, Save the Earth, Save the Earth, Save the Earth. And it's very psychedelic. And the whole movie is kind of trippy. It's very psychedelic. But I came home after seeing that movie, and the message spoke to me. And I told my mother that this is the greatest movie ever made. You know, like everybody's got to see this.
What? sing me the song.
Oh, it just goes, save the earth, save the earth. Oh, but there's a lot of lyrics, but that's the part that I remember 50 years later. But it was very woke. It was, it was one of those weird Godzilla movies where Godzilla is actually a good guy. I think Godzilla should just be a bad guy. That's more fun. But yeah,
I'm so sorry. Where did you grow up? Was this in L.A.?
Oh, I grew up in Central New York. I grew up in Syracuse, New York.
Oh, okay, in Syracuse.
That's where I grew up with. That's where I grew up with Tom Kenny in Syracuse. So we've known each other since we were six. Introduced by a crying nun.
Oh yeah.
For the folks listening, Tom Kenny's the voice of SpongeBob, but he does a million other cartoons. But Tommy was This nun was sobbing, and she drags me into his classroom and leaves me. And she goes, I can't take him anymore. And I started crying because I thought I wasn't going to see my classmates. And Tom Kenny just thought it was really cool that I could make a grown nun cry. And he introduced himself during lunch. And I'll tell you where my ego is. Like he, you know, Tommy had these big, thick glasses at first grade, and he was really skinny. And my ego was, I got to be this kid's friend, man. He's doomed. It wasn't like, oh, I met another Starbelly Sneeched. We're going to be good friends. You know, I met another weirdo. I was like, I'll take him under my wing. But, I didn't have any friends.
I'm going to sort this fucking kid out. Jesus. I like that.
I'm going to tell him what's up.
This kid needs a hero. I'm here.
This kid needs a hero. And this kid needs someone that's his parents are going to be really excited that we're friends. Because I would, later on in high school, I'd be going to jail and stuff. And for, you know, bullshit. And Tom Kenny's mother goes, oh, so your friend was in the paper.
Your special friend.
Yeah.
Riddle me this. What is the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier? Do you cry?
Well, I cry a lot.
Do you?
I actually just cried the other night watching The Electrical Life of
Louis Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it
that
good?
I cried all through it. But I mean, that was just me. It was interesting. I got that script to consider rewriting it and directing it. You know, you'd still have to take meetings and stuff, but it wasn't the script they made. They did it, not to boohoo the original script, but boy, it was so good. And visually, it was so great. And it's really cool when you don't get a part or don't get a thing, and then the person that does it kills it, knocks it out of the park.
It is good.
It is good. I met with Tim Burton years ago to be for Beetlejuice. It was there was this little window where I had heat. And I was on the list of names, and I met with Tim Burton, and I didn't get the part, obviously. And so in another universe, I'm Batman.
Wow, I love that.
But when I saw Michael Keaton and what he did, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I'm glad that's not me. This is great. So, that Louis Wayne made me cry. But, you know, I'm a sucker for people that either mentally ill or perceived as mentally ill that have to create, and it doesn't matter what people say about them. I mean, they just have to. So that movie destroyed me. But I'll tell you a story about the movie that I bawled my eyes out.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with me.
Great.
I went to see Man on the Moon, the Andy Kaufman.
I really like that film.
I like it, and I need to revisit it again, but. So for years, I had this persona, people who aren't familiar with me, it was this character, and I always did interviews as that person, and I didn't want, Andy was a big hero, and I never felt, I don't want people to know me, and I felt really safe hiding behind this persona, and my mother hated it. Yeah, my mother saw my first HBO special. She's like, well, I don't know how I can go to mass now. she thought her friends were going to, hated the persona. And there's a scene in that movie where Andy's mother's just so fed up with Andy being Andy Kaufman. And she's fed up with it. And she just would like him to be her son. And my mother had just died. And my mother never got that. My mother never got me just being me, ever. And I lost it. It was like at a premiere, and I was just sobbing uncontrollably. So, I mean, I could say It's a Wonderful Life.
No, that's the answer. That's right there. I really appreciate that answer, Bobcat.
I don't think I told anyone that.
That's very, very moving.
I love the fact that I darted out of the premiere, just like snot all down my face and everything. Well, I gotta go.
had you stopped doing the persona by the point you'd seen the film, or
no? So I'd been still hiding behind it. So my mother had never saw me just be of myself. I mean, we're never ourselves, but you know, never saw me just go out and I think my mother hated the character. A friend of mine said, "You know, your mother doesn't hate you; Your mother loves you so much. She thinks that people should just applaud when you walk out on stage.
Oh, fuck, man.
She doesn't think you should do a character or tell jokes. I was like, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's very sweet, man. What's the... I mean, that's made me cry. What's the film that scared you the most? And do you like being scared? Are you easily scared?
I'm not easily scared. Jump scares at this point, I think we all are like, all right. You know, it's a bait and switch, you know. But I love to be scared. This is a stupid story I'm going to tell. We were talking about the movie. I made Willow Creek, and I don't mean to...
I really like Willow Creek.
There's that scene, it's 19 minutes long and the camera never moves. Mm-hmm. And we're just in a tent and you hear things. And I was in a theater watching it for the first time. And then a scare comes. Sasquatch is outside the tent. And I screamed. And my friend who was in the movie, she goes, that's you, dummy. Because I was, spoiler, I was Bigfoot. I'm you know, I was outside the tent. But the reason I made that scene, it wasn't to make a scary movie, it was to make a suspenseful. I didn't know if I could make a suspenseful thing. Like, I always love when you're watching a Tarantino movie, there's always like a three people, sometimes one of the people or one of the or persons aren't in the scene, and you're at the edge of your seat and nothing's happening. And that's what I was trying to do. I wanted to see if I could do that. But like jump scares, you know, the first Tremors, I remember going to that. And just thinking, and I had low expectations. Like, I don't like reading reviews and I just saw Tremors. Yeah, I'm in it. You know, whatever. Let's go. You know, Teen Wolf. What's it about? You know, anything. It's just in. And that movie, just I loved the scares and obviously the cliches. You know, people like, you know, Jaws and things like that. But Tremors was a great one. But I was listening to the program and Pete Holmes brought up The Strangers and I was like, oh, because that is one that is terrifying. The idea, because that's not that far-fetched. Home invasion movies are always terrifying to me because that's not that far-fetched. It does happen. Yeah. And I live out in the woods. So,
yeah, I was thinking that. Like, anyone who lives in the woods in films are in danger. I can't think of a film where people live in the woods and it's fine.
Yeah, Oh, maybe Straw Dogs. But outside of that, when you live remotely, it's like I think my neighbors, you know, like I haven't even met the neighbors, you know. Right. I remember when we moved here, it was snowing, and I saw a bunch of deer in my backyard, and I got a bunch of apples and ran out, put on these boots, and then I'm like out there, and I'm like, hey, you're in your underwear. So I'm just this guy. His underwear feeding deer and a pair of duck boots. But I would have to say, like, a movie, and it's I don't know, I don't even know what it falls under, but like, it's not a horror picture, but Requiem for a Dream is a terrifying movie.
That is a fantastic answer.
And the fantasy elements, and it's and addiction, and mom, and that movie, I know it's blasphemy to you, but I did watch that one home. I did not see it in the theater.
Get out.
Get out of here. Who are you? But I have to say that I was so grateful I watched it at home because I had to stop. I had to keep stopping. I was like, oh my God. Like I stopped the movie. I was like, all right. All right, Aronofsky. You're not gonna beat me. I'm gonna finish this movie. But that to me,
at least
is
it will have a happy
picture.
Ending. Yeah, that is a horror picture. That is a horror picture. That's totally a horror picture. It builds and builds and builds, and it's a very impressive piece of work. That I tell you what, I really like, really interesting about Requiem for a Dream is I really loved that film. I was a certain age, it was a certain time, etc. But there's like behind the scenes footage of it. On the DVD, and when you see, because it's all so quick cut, and when you see the actual filming of stuff, it looks insane, and it also looks quite shit. Like it looks like, you know, the washing machine that's like a monster.
Yeah.
You know, actually filming that looks rubbish. It looks bad, and
I'm sure it's probably done with fishing line or something.
Yeah, and there's a moment with like Christopher McQuarrie And he in the behind the scenes looks like, and maybe I'm reading stuff into it, but it looks like he's looking around like, what the fuck have I signed up to? Like this, like it looks on his face like, this film's a disaster. What am I doing? And then it's all cut together and you go, this is a fucking masterpiece. Like it's so interesting seeing it broken down like that.
I should look at the behind the scenes. I need to go back and watch it again because it's an amazing movie. But I remember more how drained I felt watching that.
Yeah, it's really properly hardcore.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell me this. What is a film that most people don't like, it's critically not acclaimed, but you love it unconditionally?
Yeah, well, it's definitely critically hated, but it's the movie Jack Frost.
Ha, Michael Keaton?
No, it's
the horror one.
Yeah, 1997, yeah. The one before Jack, Michael Keaton. Here's the thing about those two movies. Michael Keaton is a dad who learns to become a good dad. After he gets killed in the car wreck, and he turns into a snowman. And then he learns how to be a good dad as a snowman. I don't know. So, and he's also rock and roll, and he plays harmonica, which harmonica's not a rock and roll instrument. It's for hobos. Hobos and Bob Dylan. But there was a year before where there's a serial killer, again, car accident. And he escapes on the night that he's going to be put to death. And then he wreaks vengeance on a town where they're having their annual snowman making contest. And he's got a grudge with the sheriff. Now, the reason that I love that movie is because, like you, I don't like to hate watch movies. And I don't even like to put down movies. But there's a spirit in that movie where they're trying their best. They're trying to make a horror film. They're trying to make the snowman Freddy Krueger. He's cracking wise. it's snow. Snow's not scary. It's just so ingenious. So, and when you watch the movie, I can tell that, like, the snow in the actual town melted. So scenes from, it's definitely got that Ed Wood thing where there's snow and then they're walking and there's no snow. But there's a spirit to it that I love watching because it's all in camera effects. It's all in camera effects. It's shooting things backwards. It's strings, it's puppets. It's all that kind of stuff. And I really love the movie. And if it's on, I stop and I have to watch it. I love Jack Frost. Now, the other one, I haven't sat through yet, but I do know the plot because I auditioned for something in it. I know that. That's why I knew the plot.
I can't believe you are constantly chasing Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton keeps taking your parts.
I had that prick. I was supposed to be in Birdman.
You were supposed to be Birdman and Jack Frost. On the other hand, what is a film that you used to love a lot and then you've seen it recently and you don't love it anymore? It might not necessarily be because it's now bad. It might just be your personal taste has changed. Like, what's that?
Yeah, well, I loved Billy Jack growing up. Billy Jack, this actor Tom Laughlin, plays this ex-vet, and he says he's an indigenous person, but in real life, Tom Laughlin wasn't, but he was a little bananas. And it's a karate film. And the first time you see Billy Jack, he shows up in a movie, Born Losers. They gave Tom Laughlin, they let him make Billy Jack, but then he had to do this biker film. And even though Born Losers came up first, Billy Jack is one of the first movies that was four-walled. he was one of, before the blockbusters, Tom Laughlin bought national spots, bought up commercials, and bought up theaters. So he was the precursor to what happened with Jaws and all that stuff. Because normally a movie would open in cities and keep rolling out. So he said, if I'm going to have to spend this much money on TV commercials. So Billy Jack was a surprised huge hit. Billy Jack, he gives these long-winded speeches before he kicks someone's ass. And that's the best, you know. Yeah. He goes, it's just, they're beautiful. And he just goes on and on and on. And someone should just shoot him. But it's Billy Jack world. So he gives, he tells you, you know, he tells you, he describes the pain he's going to inflict on you. And then he does. And it's great. So the sequel was The Trial of Billy Jack. There's also Billy Jack Goes to Washington and this whatever. But Billy Jack, the trial was the one I thought all those wonderful speeches were in. And I brought my girlfriend. I know this is a podcast. I'll give you a visual aid. I actually have a prop. I had a Billy Jack hat made.
Amazing.
So I go to the movie. I'm wearing the Billy Jack hat. It's the New Beverly. I'm sitting there. I'm sure everyone loved it behind me. And it's 3 hours long.
What?
And he talks people to death. There's no ass kicking. I'm just going, oh my God. And I'm like, you are the best girlfriend ever. Like it does not hold up. The trial of Billy Jack. Now Billy Jack still does hold up the fights and everything.
Fucking hell. 3 hours.
I wish we were on TV right now. This is a very, it's like,
you look great.
I look like indigenous Abraham Lincoln.
What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because the experience you had around seeing the film will always make it special to you, Bobcat Goldthwaite.
I'm going to exclude like I've had really insane experiences, like, you know, like, the first movie I had at Sundance, I shot for $20,000 with a crew from Craigslist. And then you sit in a theater and it's packed. And so I'm gonna cry, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a rom-com. It's called Sleeping Dogs Lie, but it was called Stay when it was at Sundance. And it was a tiny bit of bestiality, a rom-com with a little bit of bestiality. Yeah. And
just a soupçon.
Soupçon, yeah. So that happens tastefully off camera, and we're at Sundance, and I'm just a mess. I can't believe people are watching this movie projected. I didn't even think it'd ever get projected. And the incident involving the bestiality happens at the beginning of the movie. Very, like I said, very tasteful off camera. And then this woman is getting up, and she's going to walk out of the theater. This is 2 minutes in, and her friend talks her into staying. And then about an hour later, that woman was crying. She was watching the movie and she's crying. And my daughter elbows me and she goes, look at your friend. And I look and see the woman sobbing. And my daughter goes, yeah, you cry, bitch. You cry. But I would, that, speaking of my daughter, actually the movie that watching it is very emotional is, I think it's because it was called Dead Alive, but Brain Dead. The Peter Jackson film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause years ago when my daughter was young, I got that for Christmas and we watched it on Christmas, and then
lovely,
it's just become
a Christmas film.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so gory. It's so beautiful. Again, puppets in camera.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's really brilliant. It just became a holiday tradition. So
that's so good to see.
When I think of Brain Dead, I think of my daughter fondly.
I think what you're saying about Stay or Where Sleeping Dogs Lie, is that what it's called? Where Sleeping Dogs Lie.
But it was, yeah, Stay is a much better name. They said that, they would say, well, we can't call it that because there's a movie called Stay coming out. And I always hope that somebody confuses the, you know what I mean? Like someone's watching it for, it's Winoni, is Naomi Watts going to blow a dog?
But that is what you do. That is the thing that connects a lot of your films. It's like with World's Greatest Dad, there's a really sort of challenging incident.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, it's
also
fine.
Really,
I mean,
moving. It's really moving, and it is moving, that film.
It was funny because Well, I don't care if it's spoilers. People, you know. So we had a screening, and Billy Crystal comes up, and he goes, "You know, I watched the movie. I'm watching it, and I'm going, oh, it's the father and son, and the kid's horrible. And then by the end, they're going to learn that they like each other, and then you killed the prick." I go, "Yeah." And you're like, wait, what? The son's dead and he's horrible and I'm so confused, you know? So, I have such fond memories of being in that movie because Robin and I were really close. But, you know, he thought he was going to do me a solid and play like a small part so I could get the movie going. And then he called me up and he said, oh, I'd like to play Lance. I'd like to play the guy.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, really? Because I think you already did an English teacher pretty well, but I was like thrilled. You know, it was really fun working with him because it made me laugh. Because like, you know, there's always that time when I'm making a movie where the lead will look over and goes, "I'm playing you, right?" and I go, "No," and my daughter's like, "Yes."
That's very interesting. What is the film that you most relate to? What's the film you most relate to, Bobcat Goldthwait?
Well, I mean, I guess it would be, I mean, I already said Man on the Moon, but I guess I relate to that movie where it's, you know, I relate to it. I mean, I guess the difference between myself and Andy, I mean, Andy was brilliant, but I couldn't be that mean to the people around me and keep the gag going, you know?
That's my question to you. I don't know if you've watched it or been able to watch it. Jim and Andy, have you seen the documentary?
Yeah.
That is hard to watch.
I was like,
this is horrible to everyone around. And I don't know how you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like you being horrible to everyone. It's
Because then I'm saying, I'm removing myself from the equation. I'm saying that you're foolish. Now, when I go on stage and I do something odd or what I used to, the idea was, you know, I was trying to make fun of stand-up comedy, which, again, that sounds very pretentious, but I wasn't saying that you guys don't get this. You know, I wanted them to come along with me, you know. But, you know, one day I was with Robin and we were having dinner and he says, he's being Robin and he's entertaining the people around us. And I said, I'm like, I don't know why you do that. He's like, well, I go, everybody already agrees that you're the most funniest guy in the world. You know, I mean, you couldn't get any more popular. And then it came back to me and he was like, why do you piss people off? Like, I see you when you're doing really well. And then you'll say something on purpose. And we were laughing about it. And I said, well, your form of neuroses is way more lucrative than mine. Because even in the movies I make, it's like, are you still going to like me? Are you still, you know, is that thing? And that's the challenge sometimes for me is to go, can I pull this movie off? I'm not trying to blow people's minds. It's more like, can I pull this off? And in fact, the most recent script I wrote, I actually wrote a children's movie. That seemed to be the hardest thing I could wrap my brain around. Yeah. And the world is so dark. I thought the most punk rock thing I could do right now is to write a hopeful film.
I like that. What was your answer? What's your answer to what Robin Williams said to you?
I said, because they go and they go, oh, we saw Robin Williams. Oh, he's so funny. And Bobcat Goldthwait was there. Did you know what he said? And I go, I own them more. I'm in their,
You're keeping them awake.
More. I'm in their brain, you know. Yeah. They just love. But me, they're like, oh, that fucking guy. I got a fucking, yeah. So that's old Bobby.
It's power. Interesting. What is Bobcat Goldthwait? What is the sexiest film of all time?
I'm going to go with, for me, not the sexiest film, it was is All That Jazz, the Bob Fosse film.
Right? Oh,
it's just, first of all, the women are all beautiful. And they, I'm feeling all these different emotions during the takeoff, when he rewrites the musical about an airline, which is so funny. And then he manages to make it sexy and dirty and hot. And then I identified with that manic thing. Like, you know, he had, Bob Fosse was, you know, editing Lenny, and he had a year where he got the Tony, Oscar, and the Emmy. Emmy, Tony, Oscar in the same year. He actually beat out Godfather. And which is a horrible burden to put on someone. It's like, well, what do you do now? And that movie's kind of like that. Now, obviously, I have never achieved that kind of thing, but there's certainly been parts in my life where I was juggling relationships, and I was juggling, you know, I'm directing this TV show, and I'm writing this movie, and I'm doing stand-up, and I'm doing this and that and this and that. And it's a sexy movie, but not a good not a good way to live your life. You know?
Yeah, no, that's right, no. That, I like that. That's a good, really good answer. There's a subcategory to this question. The subcategory is called Troubling Boners, Worrying Why-dons. What is the film that you found arousing that you weren't sure that you should?
Well, I'm going to give you two answers, because there's the one as a kid is it's a $1 million duck. The $1 million duck. It was a Walt Disney picture, and it was Sandy Duncan.
He loves ducks.
It wasn't the duck, man. No, I would never molest a duck.
There's the pull quote.
I would never molest a duck.
An answer to a question no one asked. I would never.
If you wake me up in the middle of the night, I would never molest a duck. We weren't talking about that, Bob. But Sandy Duncan, who I don't know if you would know who she is. She do Disney films. She was on She had a series. She was just like, when I was a kid, she was in a lot of stuff. And she always played the mom. And I just was, I had it so hot for her, man. The mom in $1 million duck. There's this period of Disney films where they weren't making their animated films. When they did these live action movies, there's a lot of Kurt Russell movies.
And Dean.
Yeah. Dean Jones.
Dean Jones.
Yeah, like The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, Now You See Him, Now You Don't, The World's Greatest Athlete, all these different movies. Bug. And Million Dollar Duck, Cat from Outer Space, another one. Million Dollar Duck was, it's this heaven. It's my heaven. There's a scene where there's thousands of ducks, and they're all not flying. They're running. Nice. And so I had it bad for Sandy Duncan. Now, the other one was, okay, so I started working on a TV show.
Okay.
And I just met, I'll just say it. So it was when I first started working on the Chappelle Show.
Okay.
I probably knew him for a day or two. Hey, I'm going to the movies with my wife. You want to go? And I go, you'd love to. And we watched Secretary with Maggie Gyllenhaal, which is a very erotic movie. And I'm here with Dave and his wife. And I'm like, you guys need any pop? It was so fucking awkward.
That's fucking mad to go on a date with a couple to watch Secretary.
Again, my fault, because the less I know about a movie, I love going into a movie blind. And I think because of that, I mean, there's no way certain movies you're going to know. But every once in a while, like, there's always this big debate about American Beauty. Is it a good movie? Is it a bad movie? I went into that movie blind. It was an amazing movie. I loved it, you know? And if I had caught wind of people debating its nature and all that crap. So I love when I go to, like even Pulp Fiction, I knew it was going to be great. It was going to be Quentin Tarantino, but I didn't, on purpose, I didn't read anything about it.
Right.
And I went with Eric Idle. So Eric, I remember Eric and I just watching that movie and like screaming and looking at each other laughing, just like screaming with laughter. But like, it's pretty good.
That is very nice. Objectively, what is the greatest film of all time?
I believe greatest film of all time. And I'm going with a modern movie, and it's Boogie Nights. The reason I think that's a great movie, because it's got it all. It's got romance. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. You know, the those guys in the studio. It's got it checks all the boxes. You know, there's a chase. You know, there's just everything about that movie is so amazing. It's so wonderful and scary and dark and
You can fucking have it.
Oh, it's a beautiful movie. And I was speaking, I had like talking about Grover, you know, I had the the Chris Farley show thing was when I had a meal with Alfred Molina, you know, and asking him about that scene, you know, and it was so great. Like, you know, the firecrackers are going off and P.T. Anderson had earplugs in Alfred's so he wouldn't react to the fireworks going off.
Nice.
He's like Ricky Springfield, personal friend of mine. You know, I just love that scene so much. That's Cosmo.
Such a good
He's Chinese. That's Cosmo. He's Chinese.
So good. What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
The movie that it's on, I got to stop what I'm doing and watch. There's two, but the one, the biggest one would be Ed Wood. I love that movie. I have an Ed Wood tattoo.
This Patreon section is magnificent.
This is just, it's just on my ass. No.
Okay.
So there's Ed Wood.
Oh, wow. For the listener at home, that is in a fucking detailed, big ass, amazing tattoo on his arm. That is really,
it's really good, man. And my sister goes, your uncle got Ed Hardy on his arm. I'm like, no.
That's really
but
good.
I don't believe Ed Wood is the worst filmmaker of all time. I think if you're, you know, if you're not imaginative, if you're making a movie just for money, if you're not, if there's, you know, there's so much Ed is in those movies, you know, they're never boring. I think
boring is the biggest crime. Now, you don't want to have a worst one, and I get it, but if you did, what's your worst film?
Oh, worst film?
Yeah.
I never saw all of it. It was The Social Network.
Incredible, incredible, surprising answer.
Well, David Fincher's super talented, and Aaron Sorkin, I love Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
But when I sat there, and I'm sitting there going, wait, is this about these douchey Ivy League bros becoming billionaires on a app, on a platform that's designed originally to check out women and rate their breasts and faces? I was like, the only thing that could save this is like Travis Bickle walking in and shooting them all in the face. I mean, when I figured out, because I'm not on Facebook and I'm not one of those guys. So I was watching the movie and I was like, oh, this is really what this movie's about. I don't give a fuck about any of these people.
very interesting.
Because I hate that plot device. Even it was very big in the 90s. There was a Secret to My Success, I think a Michael J. Fox movie. It's like these movies where the plot was you got rich.
Mm-hmm.
And that was supposed to be, I mean, like if you're struggling and you hear some blowhard guy from the 80s listen to a bunch of police academies telling you that money's not where it's at, man, they'll go, well, fuck off, man. You've already sold your soul being in talking horse movies. You got some sack on you. But when that's the prize, it's just ridiculous, you know? It's just like those movies where, like Revenge of the nerds at the end aren't nerds. They're just acting like bros. They're womanizers, and they're just the frat guys. So those movies were all greenlit by frat guys.
Yeah. Fascinating. You're in comedy. You're a comedian. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
There's a couple. There's a movie called Little Murders that not a lot of folks know about. It's Elliot Gould and Charles Fleischer. Charles Fleischer, though. That's Jules
Roger Fight Rabbit.
Jules Pfeiffer, Charles Fleischer. Roger Rabbit wrote it. Jules Pfeiffer wrote it. It's about as dark as it gets. And Elliot Gould produced it. And it's hilarious. And it's just about, it's in the 70s. And it's just about how horrible we're becoming as people. And one of the complaints from the movie I did with God Bless America was that people didn't talk that way because people do these big, long speeches. But I'm directly ripping off Little Murders because people do these big, long speeches. And I won't ruin it, but where that movie ends up for the happy ending is so, I was like, oh, God damn it. I wish I came up with that. So, but then like, you know, I'm not so bourgeois that like, you know, like What We Do in the Shadows was hilarious. I mean... But What We Do in the Shadows, what that has in common with me was when I was a kid and I saw Young Frankenstein, I walked out of the theater and just bought another ticket and walked back in. Dummy me didn't know I could have just sat there. But that was the first movie that I watched twice, you know, like on purpose. Yeah. And it just changed my mind. You know, it changed my mind. It blew my mind. It changed my world. You know, I didn't know it, but subtextually, I think I was looking at Mel Brooks, you know. I just loved his movies, producers, and, you know, Mel Brooks. So, but when I would read a poster as a kid, I didn't look at who starred in it. I always looked at who directed it and who wrote it, which I should have known 40 years ago that this is what I wanted to do, being behind the camera. And it was interesting because when we were kids, and by the time we got to middle school, Tom Kenny has got a picture of Mel Blanc in his locker, and I've got young Frankenstein in my locker. So he wanted to be Mel Blanc, and I definitely wanted to be Mel Brooks, and I didn't even know it.
That is excellent. Bobcat Galfway, this has been an absolute treat. I've loved this. You've been wonderful, and I really appreciate it. However, when you went skydiving, and you love skydiving, it's your favorite thing. You love it. But you thought, well, you got a bit cocky with it, and you forgot to put on a parachute, and you jumped out, and you thought, oh, shit, you realized you didn't have a parachute. And you thought, I'm going to say something profound. And you started singing, save the earth, save the earth, as you plowed towards the ground. And then suddenly the ground got nearer and you shit yourself. You shit your pants. You shit yourself inside out. And then there was a bus of orphans headed towards you. You could see them coming. You were like, oh, well, maybe I'll kill all these orphans. And you slammed into the bus.
Why that? But worst case, it'll be a good story.
You didn't kill them at all because you were mostly shit by this point. And all that happened was you just splattered orphans with shit. And I was walking along, you know, with a coffin, you know what I'm like. And I see this bus of this bus of children, and they're covered in shit. And they're all laughing. They're laughing. They're like, what has happened? And I'm like, oh, there he is. So I clear up what I can of you, put you in the coffin, but like I'm having to like get the fucking jaws of life because some of you is so embedded in this bus. We're having to cut off the ceiling of the bus, and like I'm also like I'm going over to the kids and I'm like, I'm really sorry, can I just scrape some of that shit off your face, because that's Bobcat, you know what I mean, as much as I'm trying to get as much of him as I can. Put you all in the coffin. It's absolutely jam-packed in there of shit and bus and you, and there's no room in this coffin, let's be honest. There's only enough room to slide one DVD in the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show the people the ducks of heaven when it is your movie night? Bobcat Goldthwait, go.
Well, here's the thing. All the other people and ducks, they brought in, you know, 2001, they brought in Citizen Kane. They brought in Casablanca. It's so high that they don't understand how awesome those films are until I bring in Jack Frost. And now they get it. And by the way, I mean the Michael Keaton one.
Okay.
just so they can get a balance. They go, holy shit, they were making... No, I would bring in the schlocky... fun one, because
you need a balanced diet. Like,
well, also, how can you gauge what's good or bad if you don't? But it's not even bad, you know. It's like you say, nobody starts to make a piece of crap, and I guarantee you, everybody on Jack Frost was trying their best, and that's what I love about that movie. You know, like
famously, God loves a trier.
A trier, yeah. I mean, it's. There's a difference between Jack Frost and Mac and Me. Mac and Me is made by McDonald's. Yeah. That's a horrible film.
Yeah.
Just because, that's the only reason that movie exists. But Jack Frost, they were trying, man. And I want other people to sit in a theater and look over at each other and go, are we really, is this really happening?
Is this the guy that molested a duck? I never molested a duck.
I did not molest a duck. This is the last time we let the duck fucker pick the pictures.
Bobcat, what a pleasure. Is there anything before you go you would like to tell people to look out for or to watch or to listen to of yours coming up?
I would say if folks checked out the documentary of me and Dana Gould doing stand-up, it's on the road, but it's a bit of a narrative of a documentary. It was just going to be a movie about, it was just going to be stand-up, but then the pandemic hit, so it gets right into all of our lives.
And that is called Joyride.
That's Joyride's the movie. Folks should listen to this podcast. I really love this podcast. I live out in the middle of the woods, and when I listen to it, I feel like I have a lot of friends. And I don't even know you. So it was great meeting you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. I've loved doing this. I hope you have a wonderful death, and good night to you, sir.
Thank you. As long as there's ducks.
So that was episode 173. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20-25 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Bobcat. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating and write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read, helps numbers, Maureen loves it. You're all appreciated. Thank you very much for listening to the show as well. It means a lot. Thank you so much to Bobcat for doing it, especially for all the time he gave me. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another incredible guest. Who will it be? You'll have to find out next week. Exciting, isn't it? So that is it for now. In the meantime, I hope you're all well. Have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Looking for a fabulous fashion brand that celebrates you? Then look no further than Boston Proper, where styles are designed with you in mind, so you can look and feel amazing, no matter the day, season, or occasion. At bostonproper.com, you'll find fashion that knows you best. For over 30 years, Boston Proper has been the fashion destination for confident women who want to elevate their look with unique, sophisticated clothing at affordable prices. Visit bostonproper.com today. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.